by the miracle of unmerited favor, Jackson Snyder Presents is back.
Simon Magus gets a little play in the New Testament, and he turns out to be a rather evangelical character. But the other accounts of Simon Magus in the Apocrypha tags him with a much different character. Let's look at all the early and major accounts of Simon's life and works, including some of his purported writings. Then perhaps we can determine whether he went away in good stead with the apostles or did finally get the left foot of fellowship. And in those apocryphal accounts, there is a plethora of information that would make us think that he was indeed a historical character.
A historical character?
Oh, that's the mixer. I think there's no doubt about that. But that his teachings have influenced many people yet today who call themselves Gnostic or New Agers, or in some cases, Christian. And by the way, I'm working with some new equipment today, so if the sound is not quite right or my S's disappear, you'll know why. I've got a Mackie Pro FX V3 10-channel mixer to take the place of my 2-channel mixer, and I'm working on getting all these knobs and dials to a place where I will sound better for you. The only problem is, Brother Shroomkoff is running the board.
Well, yes, so what's the problem with that? Are you saying I can't run this board?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. But, you know, I would like to be able to not only speak and listen to it, but run the board, too. I just can't.
Oh, I get it now. I thought you were insulting me in front of my friends. I'm very sorry I took it that way.
You are forgiven. I never want to do anything to upset you because I need you so much.
Well, I guess after all this time, I'm almost like a real person.
You are real because love is real and we love each other as brothers. And if you can love, you're alive and you are real. And besides, I need your help in reading some of this stuff. It's a long passage.
Oh, of course, of course.
And if you weren't real and you weren't here, who would make that delicious shroom coffee?
Of course, it's a shroom delicious.
Say that again.
It's a shroom delicious. Can we play the commercial again?
Oh, sure. We'll leave it to the end, though, because I know the people that are listening to this are going to listen to the whole thing. How could they not?
Inquiring minds want to know.
You betcha, boy.
Oh, good job.
Then let us begin. This comes from the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 8, verses 9 through 24. Now a certain fellow by name Shimon HaMag, Simon, had been previously in the city practicing magic and driving the people of Samaria out of their wits, saying that he was some great one, to whom all from small to great gave heed, saying, "This man is the power of Elohim, which is called great." And they gave heed to him, owing to his having driven them out of their wits for a long time by the magic arts. But when they believed on Philip preaching about the kingdom of Elohim in the name of Yeshua HaMashiach, they began to be baptized, both men and women. And Shimon himself also believed, after being baptized, remained constantly with Philip, and was driven out of his wits on seeing the signs and great wonders that took place. And the apostles in Jerusalem, hearing that Samaria had received the word of Elohim, sent Peter and John to them, and they went down and prayed for them, that they might receive the Ruach HaKodesh. For as yet it had not fallen upon any of them, but they had only been baptized into the name of Yeshua HaMashiach. Then they laid their hands on them, and they received the Ruach HaKodesh. And when Shimon saw that the Ruach was given by the laying on of hands of the apostles, he offered them money, saying,
"Give unto me also this power, in order that on whomsoever I lay my hands, he may receive the Ruach HaKodesh."
But Kephar said unto him, Thy silver perish with thee, and that thou didst think that the gift of Elohim is possessed with money. There is nothing for you, part or lot, in this word, for your heart is not right before Elohim. Therefore, turn from this evil of thine, and pray to the Master, if by chance the thought of your heart shall be forgiven. For I see that you are in the gall of bitterness, and the bond of iniquity. And Shimon answered and said,
Pray ye therefore on my behalf to the Master, that none of these things that ye have said come upon me.
And that's the whole account. Sounds like Shimon came out of this pretty good, actually. But let's look at the account of Justin Martyr, who tells us a little more. He says, And thirdly, that even after the ascension of Messiah into heaven, the demons cast before themselves as a shield certain men who said that they were Elohim, who were not only not expelled by you, but even thought worthy of honors. A certain Samaritan, Shimon, who came from a village called Gitta, who in the reign of Claudius Caesar wrought magic wonders by the art of the demons who possessed him and was considered a god in your imperial city of Rome, and as a god was honored with a statue by you, which statue was erected in the river Tiber between the two bridges with the following inscription in Roman, Shimone Deo Santo. And nearly all the Samaritans, but few among the rest of the nations, confess him to be the first god and worship him. And they speak of a certain Helen, who went around with him at that time, and who had formerly prostituted herself, but was made by him his first thought. Irenaeus also speaks about Shimon in these words. He was a Samaritan, the notorious magician of whom Luke, the disciple and adherent of the apostle, says, But there was a fellow named Simon, etc., etc., etc. Now they gave great heed to him, because he had driven them out of their wits by his magical phenomena. This Shimon, therefore, pretended to be a believer, thinking that the apostles also wrought their cures by magic, and not by the power of Elohim, and supposing that their fillings with the Ruach HaKodesh was by the laying on of hands, those who believed in Elohim, through that Yahshua Mashiach, who was being preached by them, and this was effected by some superior magical knowledge, and offering money to the apostles, so that he also might obtain the power of giving the Ruach HaKodesh to whomsoever he would, he received this answer from Kephar, Thy money perish with thee, since thou hast thought that the gift of Elohim is obtained possession of with money. For thee there is neither part nor lot in this word, for your heart is not right before Elohim, etc. Irenaeus continues by saying, And since the magician still refused to believe in Elohim, he ambitiously strove to contend against the apostles, so that he also might be thought of great renown, by extending his investigations into universal magic still farther, so that he struck many aghast, so much so that he is said to have been honored with a statue for his magic knowledge by Claudius Caesar. He, therefore, was glorified by many as a god, and he taught that it was he himself who, forsooth, appeared among the Jews as the Son, while in Samaria he descended as the Father, and in the rest of the nations he became as the Ruach HaKodesh, that he was the highest power, to wit, the Father over all, and that he allowed himself to be called by whatever name men pleased. Now the sect of the Samaritan Simon, from whom all the heresies took their origin, was composed of the following materials. He took round with him a certain Helen, a hired prostitute from the Phoenician city of Tyre, after he had purchased her freedom, saying that she was the first conception, or thought, of his mind, the mother of all, by whom in the beginning he conceived in his mind the making of the angels and archangels, and that this thought, leaping forth from him, and knowing what was the will of her father, descended to the lower regions and generated the angels and powers, by whom also, he said, this world was made. And after she had generated them, she was detained by them through envy, for they didn't wish to be thought to be progeny of any other. As for himself, he was entirely unknown by them, and it was his thought that was made prisoner by the powers and angels that have been emanated by her. And she suffered every kind of indignity at their hands to prevent her reascending to her father, even to being imprisoned in the human body and transmigrating into other female bodies, as from one vessel into another. She also was in that Helen, on whose account the Trojan War arose. Wherefore also Stesichorus was deprived of his sight when he spake evil of her in his poems, and that afterwards, when he repented and wrote what is called the Recantation, in which he sang her praises, he recovered his sight. So she, transmigrating from body to body, and thereby also continually undergoing indignity, last of all even stood for hire in a brothel, and she was the lost sheep. I know Hebrew roots teachers that teach this very thing now, that a soul or a spirit transmigrates from one person to the other, or shifts shape, or becomes reincarnated. I've had many discussions with this particular teacher, but he or she won't relent, and she has many followers. Let's take up Irenaeus again. Wherefore also he himself had come to take her away for the first time and free her from her bonds, and also to guarantee salvation to men by his gnosis, knowledge. For as the angels were mismanaging the world, since each of them desired the sovereignty, he had come to set matters right, and that he had descended, transforming himself and being made like to the powers and principalities and angels, so that he appeared to men as a man, although he was not a man, and was thought to have suffered in Judea, although he didn't really suffer. The prophets, moreover, had spoken their prophecies under his inspiration, under the inspiration of the angels who made the world. Wherefore, those who believed on him and his Helen paid no further attention to them, and followed their own pleasure as though free, for men were saved by his grace, and not by righteous works. For righteous actions are not according to nature, but from accident, in the manner that the angels who made the world have laid it down by such precepts, enslaving men. Wherefore also he gave new promises, that the world should be dissolved, and that they who were his should be freed from the rule of those who made the world. Isn't this what's taught today? Simonianism? Do away with the law? Do away with all laws? Receive some spirit to set you free by the grace of God without any works? I'd also add here something that the church kind of misses when they talk about Irenaeus, that he implies here a salvation by works. And he goes on, wherefore their initiated priests live immorally, and every one of them practices magic arts to the best of his ability. They use exorcisms and incantations, love philters also, and spells, and what are called familiars, and dream centers, and the rest of the curious arts assiduously cultivated by them. They have also an image of Shimon, made in the likeness of Jupiter, and of Helen, in that of Minerva, and they worship the statues, and they have a designation for their most impiously minded founder, being called Shimonians, from whom the Gnosis, falsely so called, derives its origins, as one can learn from their own assertions. Now, people follow this religion today, that there's no reason to keep the rule because everything here is already doomed and evil, and what their body does makes no difference. What makes the difference is that aeon, or spirit, that comes into their bodies. if you don't think people worship this way today and believe this way today, I mean exactly like this, then you haven't gotten out during the lockdown period and you haven't been to church lately. Something very similar to this is taught everywhere, both in the Christian and pagan communities, especially with these so-called spirits, angels, or aeons coming down to you and revealing themselves to you and inhabiting you. Also, what this text calls familiars, familiar spirits or guardian angels. It's not that I don't believe in that. It's just that people are worshiping these angels now, or they're beckoning them to come in and have their way within the body that believes in such a way. Clement of Alexandria, in his Stromata, writes in the first passage, the Simonian use of the term "he who stood" is confirmed. In the latter, we are told that a branch of the Simonians was called Antichiti. Now look, he who stood. This is the doctrine taken from the Ebionites, the standing man, that goes back to the priesthood of Phinehas, and the phrase "he who stood" refers to the one who always stands before the great Elohim. Then we have Tertullian with a brief notice regarding Shimon HaMag, in agreement with the last. For Shimon the Samaritan, also the purveyor of the Ruach HaKodesh in the Acts of the Apostles, after he had been condemned by himself, together with his money, to perdition, shed vain tears and betook himself to assaulting the truth, as though for the gratification of vengeance, supported by the powers of his art, for the purpose of his illusions, through some power or other, he purchased with the same money a Tyrian woman, Helen, from a place of public pleasure, a fit commodity, instead of the Ruach HaKodesh. And he pretended he was the highest father, and that she was his first suggestion, whereby he had suggested the making of the angels and archangels, that she, sharing in this design, had sprung forth from the father and leaped down into the lower regions, and that there, the design of the father being prevented, she had brought forth angelic powers ignorant of the father, the artificer of the world. By these she was detained, not according to his intention, lest when she had gone, they should be thought to be the progeny of another, and therefore being made subject to every kind of contumely, that's debasement or perversion, so that by her depreciation she might not choose to depart, she had sunk to as low as the human form. And though she had had to be restrained by chains of flesh, and then for many ages being turned about through a succession of female conditions, she became also that Helen who proved so fatal to Priam, and after to the eyes of Stesichorus, for she had caused his blindness on account of the insult of his poem again, and afterwards had removed it because of her pleasure at his praise. And thus, transmigrating from body to body, in the extreme of dishonor she had stood ticketed for hire, a Helen viler than her predecessor. She was therefore the lost sheep to whom the highest father, Shimon, you know, had descended. And after she was recovered and brought back, I know not whether on his shoulders or knees, he afterward had respect to the salvation of men, as it were by the liberation of those who had to be freed from these angelic powers, for the purpose of deceiving whom he transformed himself, and pretending that he was a man to men only, playing the part of the son in Judea and that of the father in Samaria. What a wily fellow.
I'm kind of thinking here that this Helena, this prostitute, whom Simon says was his first thought in order to redeem human beings, had to come down and experience every vile pleasure, every debasement, every moral failure, and be punished by people, and to be beaten and whipped and imprisoned, not only by angels, but the debased leaders of the brothel. She, through these types of works redeems humankind from bondage to angels. As he earlier said, the angels made the world, and when he's talking about angels, he's actually talking about demons, as we've read in other Gnostic literature, that each of the thousands of demons formed a different part of mankind. One made thumb, one made eyelid, one made big toe, etc. And through her evil and contumanistic behaviors, was then able to be exalted and bring others who were endowed with these same kind of demonic spirits with her into the higher plane of paradise, where they could experiencing these things in even greater depths of depravity. And that's what I understand by what you just said. It's hard to understand because of all this old English.
I think you're exactly right. And of course, this is what we read in the regular Gnostic literature that's come down to us. Everything in that system is turned around from the system of holiness and good works that we know of, whereas it seems that one might be saved in Simonianism by doing as much evil as possible and being evilly treated and having to be subject to the natural laws of the universe. Well, that would be a good enough excuse for a person to go off and do anything they wanted to themselves, to others, and to all creation. Exactly the opposite of our understanding of restoring creation, that because creation is already debauched and having been created by evil powers, one might ultimately be saved and turn into a spirit by doing as much evil as you possibly could. And when we read in the Nazarene Acts, some of the things that Shimon HaMag actually does and says, what you are saying makes perfect sense. You are a good student of the literature.
Oh, thank you, but you mustn't exalt me to the high heaven because I've made an observation. Our time is limited here. Let's get going again.
Okay.
Here's another text from Hippolytus, who says, I will, therefore, set forth the system of Shimon of Gita, a village of Samaria, and shall show that it is from him that those who followed him got their inspiration, and that the speculations they venture upon have been of like nature through their terminology, though their terminology is different. This Shimon was skilled in magic and deluded many, partly by the art of Thrasymedes, in the way we have explained above, and partly corrupting them by means of demons. He endeavored to deify himself, a sorcerer fellow and full of insanity, whom the apostles confuted in the Acts. And as the story of Apsethus is not very dissimilar to the ambition of the foolish Simon, it will not be unseemly to repeat it, for it is quite in keeping with Shimon's endeavor. So we're going to talk a little about Apsethus, the Libyan, who wanted to become a god. But in spite of the great exertions, he failed to realize his longing, and so he desired that, at any rate, people should think that he had become one. And indeed, for a considerable time, he really did get people to think that such was the case. For those foolish Libyans sacrificed to him as to some divine power, thinking that they were placing their confidence in a voice that came down from heaven. Same old story, deceivers among us, fallen stars. Continuing, well, he collected a large number of parrots and put them all into a cage. For there are a great many parrots in Libya, and they mimic the human voice very distinctly. So he kept the birds for some time and taught them all to say, Apsethus is a god.
Apsethus is a god.
And when, after a long time, the birds were trained and could speak the sentence which he considered would make him be thought to be a god, he opened the cage and let the parrots go in every direction. And the voice of the birds as they flew about went out into all of Libya, and their words reached as far as the Greek settlements. And thus the Libyans, astonished at the voices of these birds, and having no idea of the trick that had been played them by Apsethus, considered him to be a god. if the bird said so. But one of the Greeks, correctly surmising the contrivance of the supposed god, not only confuted him by means of the self-same parrots, but also caused the total destruction of this boastful and vulgar fellow. For the Greek caught a number of the parrots and retaught them to say, "Apsithus caged us and made us say, Apsithus is a god." And when the Libyans heard their recantation of the parrots, they all assembled together of one accord and burned Apsithus alive. That's a very neat trick, though. Don't tell that story to certain religious leaders. Monkey see, monkey do. Clement continues. Clement continues, and in the same way we must regard Shimon the magician, more readily comparing him with the Libyan fellows, thus becoming a god. And if the comparison is a correct one, and the fate that the magician suffered was somewhat similar to that of Apsithus, let us endeavor to reteach the parrots of Shimon that he was not Messiah, who has stood, stands, and will stand, but a man, the child of a woman, begotten of seed from blood and carnal desire like other men. And that this is the case, we shall easily demonstrate as our narrative proceeds. Oh yes, Shimon had lots of other tricks. Pick up the Nazarene Acts sometime. My recounting of the homilies and recognitions of Clement. This is a lot about Simon in there, and his debates with Kepha. And it goes along with this pretty well. For Shimon, in his paraphrasing of the Torah of Moses, speaks with artful misunderstanding. When Moses says, "Elohim is a fire burning and destroying," taking in an incorrect sense what Moses said, he declares that fire is the universal principle, not understanding what was said, that is, not that Elohim is fire, but a fire burning and destroying.
In other words, he's saying that Moses is speaking metaphorically, I suppose.
Yes, I think that's exactly it.
And thus he not only tears to pieces the Torah of Moses, but also plunders from Heraclitus the obscure. I think what he means by obscure in this case are the hidden or the occult. And Shimon states that the universal principle is boundless power as follows. And this is a quote from Shimon's books of religion, to wit, "This is the writing of the revelation of voice and name from thought, the great power and boundless. Wherefore shall it be sealed, hidden, concealed, laid in the dwelling of which the universal root is the foundation." Remember, voice, name, thought, and Helen are emanations of a God that is higher than Yahweh, a good God, whereas Yahweh is an evil creator, and that everything that Yahweh has put on this earth is evil, though scripture says it was good.
And when Shimon says God, he's speaking of himself.
Continuing, and he says that man here below, born of blood, is the dwelling, and that the boundless power dwells in him, which he says is the universal root. And according to Shimon, the boundless power, fire, is not a simple thing, as the majority who say that the four elements are simple have considered fire also to be simple, but that the fire has a twofold nature. And of this twofold nature, he calls the one side the concealed, and the other the manifested, stating that the concealed parts of the fire are hidden in the manifested, and the manifested produced by the concealed. This is what Aristotle calls impotentiality and inactuality, the two sides of fire. Potentiality, actuality, kinetic potential, and Plato, the intelligible and the sensible. So he's comparing, to some extent, Shimon's philosophy with the Greek philosophers that preceded him by about 300 years.
I must say that, in a way, this is like Paul, who compares his philosophy to that of Seneca and a couple other Greek philosophers as well.
Continuing, and the manifested side of the fire has all things in itself which man can perceive of things visible, or which he unconsciously fails to perceive, whereas the concealed side is everything which one can conceive as intelligible, even though it escapes sensation, or which a man fails to conceive. And generally, we may say, of all things that are, both sensible and intelligible, which he designates concealed and manifested, the fire, which is above the heavens, is the treasure house, as it were a great tree, like that seen by Nebuchadnezzar in his vision, from which all flesh is nourished. And he considered the manifested side of the fire to be the trunk, branches, leaves, and bark surrounding it on the outside. All of these parts of the great tree, he says, are set on fire from the all-devouring flame of the fire and destroyed. But the fruit of the tree, if its imaging has been perfected and it takes the shape of itself, is placed in the storehouse and not cast into the fire. For the fruit, he says, is produced to be placed in the storehouse, but the husk to be committed to the fire. That is to say, the trunk, which is generated not for its own sake, but for that of the fruit, whatever that means.
Oh, that certainly makes a lot of sense. Do I smell smoke?
And this, he says, is what is written in Scripture. Quote, for the vineyard of Yahweh Sabaoth is the house of Israel, and the man of Judah is a well-beloved shoot. And if the man of Judah is a well-beloved shoot, it is shown, he says, that a tree is nothing else than a man.
I see men as trees walking.
But concerning its sundering and dispersion, he says, the Scripture has sufficiently spoken, and what has been said is sufficient for the instruction of those whose imaging has been perfected. Perfected, that is, all flesh is grass, and every glory of the flesh is the power of grass. The grass is dried up, and the flower therefore falleth, but the speech of Yahweh endureth for the eternity, or in the Gnostic terms, aeon. Now the speech of Yahweh, he says, is the speech which is also a being, engendered in the mouth and the word logos, for elsewhere there is no place of production. Sounds like nonsense. To be brief, therefore, the fire, according to Shimon, being of such a nature, both all things that are visible and invisible, and in like manner those that sound within and those that sound aloud, those that can be numbered and those which can't be numbered, in the great revelation, name of one of his books, he calls it the perfect intellectual. That's the very name of one of the books in the Gnostic library, Perfect Thunder Mind. He calls it the perfect intellectual as being everything that can be thought of an infinite number of times in an infinite number of ways, both as to speech, thought, and action, just as Empedocles says, quote, by earth, earth we perceive, by water, water, by ether, ether, fire by destructive fire, by friendship, friendship, and strife by bitter strife. I hope you can follow this better than I can. Then Clement of Alexandria goes on to describe his entire religion, which I am not going to read because it seems no more intelligible than what I've already read about it. I'm looking through it again right now.
But when he says the navel going forth from the region of Eden is attached to the fetus in the epigastric regions, that which is commonly called by everyone the navel, and the two veins by which the blood flows and is carried from the Edenic region through what are called the gates of the liver, which nourish the fetus, and the air ducts, which we said were channels for breath, embracing the bladder, on either side in the region of the pelvis, are united at the great duct which is called the dorsal aorta, etc.
Maybe he founded Kabbalah. Kind of sounds like it. Yet on and on. A long description of the Shimonian religion, including quotations from Shimon's book, The Revelation, and it looks to me like it's straight-line Gnosticism. If you don't know about Gnosticism, there's plenty of it going on today, including in Christian and Hebrew worship circles, and I have several podcasts explaining it with some examples of Gnostic literature as well, if you want to look those up at youtube1.org. But now you'll have to excuse me. I'm going to eat my dinner and think about the next so-called church father we have. That is Origen. Some people pronounce that Origen, but it's Origen. And so please give me 3.5 minutes to eat and I'll be right back.
You are listening to Jackson Snyder Presents The Thinking Believer.
If you've gotten this far, I have a treat for you. For the rest of this presentation, let's listen to Shimon in his own words, as Kifa, Paulos, and Shimon have a great contest before the Emperor Nero and witness the great demise of Shimon, Kifa, and Paulos. For in the Acts of Peter and Paul, a New Testament apocryphal work, all three of them attain their martyrdom, Peter and Paul at the hands of Nero, but Shimon at the voices of Kifa and Paulos. Here is the ancient story recounted to you from eyewitnesses, and perhaps this is a story you've never heard of before. I put it in presentation form, again from the book, The Acts of Peter and Paul. So you might want to pause right now.
And go get you a little glass of wine, a piece of cheese, a morsel of bread, and say a prayer for me as we do this little drama for you.
Continuing on now with my presentation of Shimon HaMag or Simon Magus, here's an excerpt from the Acts of Peter and Paul, in which you can hear these three in their own words as they debate before the Emperor Nero. Who wins? Nobody wins, as you'll hear in the end of this recording. We're calling Peter, Kifa, Paul, Paulos, and Simon, Shimon. I think you'll enjoy this excerpt. A lot of work went into this, and in the entire audiobook. This is just a short excerpt from the 14-hour book on audio, The Nazarene Acts of the Apostles. For a short time, you can get your own audiobook free of charge. The whole thing, including the Clementine homilies, the Clementine recognitions, the Acts of Peter and Paul, and several other ancient and divine stories that you may never have heard before about the apostles, especially those left out of the Acts of the Apostles. Oh, you can get your copy of the audio by download from NazareneActs.com. Are you ready to go, Brother Shumkoff?
Already, Eddie.
Okay, an excerpt from the Acts of Peter and Paul.
When the people were making a seditious murmuring, Shimon, moved with zeal, rouses himself and began to say many evil things about Kifa, saying that he was a wizard and a cheat. And they believed him, wondering at his miracles, for he made a brazen serpent move itself, and stone statues to laugh and move themselves, and himself to run and suddenly to be raised into the air. But as a set-off to these, Kifa healed the sick by a word, by praying made the blind to see, put demons to flight by a command. Sometimes he even raised the dead. And he said to the people that they should not only flee from Shimon's deceit, but also that they should expose him, that they might not seem to be slaves to the devil. And thus it happened that all pious men abhorred Shimon HaMag and proclaimed him irreverent. But those who adhered to Shimon strongly affirmed Kifa to be a Magian, bearing false witness as many of them as were with Shimon HaMag, so that the matter came even to the ears of Nero the Caesar, and he gave order to bring Shimon HaMag before him, and he, coming in, stood before him, and began suddenly to assume different forms, so that all of a sudden he became a child, and after that a little old man, and at other times a young man, for he changed both face and stature into different forms, and was in a frenzy, having the devil as his slave. Nero, seeing this, supposed him to be truly the son of Elohim, but the Sholiach Kepha showed him to be both a liar and a wizard, a base and disrespectful apostate, and in all things opposed to the truth of Elohim, and that nothing yet remained of him except his wickedness, later made apparent by the command of Elohim, so it might be made manifest to them all. Then Shimon, having gone in to Nero, said,
Listen, O good emperor, I am the son of Elohim come down from the skies. Until now I have endured this Kepha who is calling himself a Sholiach, but now he has doubled the evil, for Polos himself also teaches the same things, and having his mind turned against me, is said to preach along with him, in reference to whom, if you will not contrive their destruction, it is very plain that your kingdom cannot stand.
Then Nero, filled with concern, ordered his slaves to bring both of them before him immediately, and on the following day, Shimon HaMag, and Kepha, and Paulos, the Shlakim of Messiah, having come before Nero, Shimon then said,
These are the disciples of the Nazarene, and it is not at all well that they should be of the people of Yehuda.
And Nero said, What is a Nazarene? Shimon said,
There is a city of Yehuda that has always been opposed to us, called Nazareth, and to it the teacher of these men belonged.
Nero said, But God commands us to love every man, so why then do you persecute them? Shimon said,
This is a race of men who have turned aside all Yehuda from believing in me.
Nero said to Kepha, Why are you thus unbelieving according to your race? Then Kepha said to Shimon, You have been able to impose upon all, but upon me never. And those who have been deceived, Elohim has through me recalled from this error. And since you have learned by experience that you cannot get the better of me, I wonder with what face you boast yourself before the emperor, and thus suppose that, through your magic art, you will overcome the disciples of Messiah. Nero said, Who is Messiah? Kepha said, He is whom that this Shimon HaMag affirms himself to be, but this is a most wicked man, and his works are of the devil. But if you wish to know, O good emperor, the things that have been done in Yehuda regarding Messiah, take the writings of Pontius Pilate sent to Claudius, and thus you will know all. And Nero ordered them to be brought and to be read in their presence, and they were to the following effect.
Quiet!
Pontius Pilate to Claudius, greeting. There has lately happened an event that I myself was involved in. For the Yehudaim, through envy, have inflicted on themselves and those coming after them dreadful judgments. Their fathers had promises that their God would send them his Holy One from the sky, who according to reason should be called their king, and he promised to send him to the earth by means of a virgin. He then, when I was procurator, came into Yehuda, and they saw him enlightening the blind, cleansing lepers, healing paralytics, expelling demons from men, raising the dead, subduing the winds, walking upon the waves of the sea, and doing many other wonders, and all the people of the Yehudaim called him Son of Elohim. Then the chief priests, moved with envy against him, seized him and delivered him to me. And telling one lie after another, they said that he was a wizard, and did contrary to their law. And I, having believed that these things were so,
gave him up after scourging him to their will, and they crucified him, and after he was buried, set guards over him. But he, while my soldiers were guarding him, rose on the third day. And to such a degree was the wickedness of the Yehudim inflamed against him, that they gave money to the soldiers, saying, "Say his disciples have stolen his body." But they, having taken the money, were not able to keep silence as to what had happened, for they have testified that they have seen him after he was risen, and that they have received money from the Yehudim. These things, therefore, have I reported, that no one should falsely speak otherwise.
It's break time, right? Be right back.
And that you should not suppose that the falsehoods of the Yehudim are to be believed.
So after the letter was read, Nero said,
"Tell me, Kifah, were all these things thus done by him? Him?
And Kifah said, "They were, with your permission, O good emperor. For this Shimon is full of lies and deceit, even if it should seem that he is what he is not, that is, a god. In the true Messiah there is all excellent victory through Elohim, and through man, which that incomprehensible glory assumed, which through man designed to come to the assistance of men. But in this Shimon there are two essences, of man and of devil, who through man endeavors to ensnare men." Shimon said,
"I wonder, O good emperor, that you reckon this man of any consequence, a man uneducated, a fisherman of the poorest, and endowed with power neither in word nor by rank. But that I may not long endure him as an enemy, I will immediately order my angels to come and avenge me upon him."
Kifah said, "I am not afraid of your angels, but they will be much more afraid of me and the power and trust of my master Yeshua Messiah, whom you falsely declare yourself to be." Nero said,
"Are you not afraid, Kifah or Shimon, who confirms his godhood by works?"
Kifah said, "Godhood is in him who searches the hidden things of the heart. Now then, tell me what I am thinking about or what I am doing. I disclose to your slaves who are here what my thought is before he tells lies about it, in order that he may not dare to lie as to what I am thinking about."
Nero said, "Come hither and tell me what you are thinking about."
Kifah said, "Order a barley loaf to be brought and to be given to me secretly." And when Nero ordered it to be brought and secretly gave it to Kifah, Kifah said, "Now tell us, Shimon, what has been thought or what said or what done."
Nero said, "Do you expect me to believe that Shimon does not know these things, who both raised a dead man and presented himself on the third day after he had been beheaded, and who has done whatever he said he would do?"
Kifah said, "But he did not do it before me."
Nero said, "But he did all these things before me, for assuredly he ordered angels to come to him, and they came."
Kifah said, "If he has done what is very great, why does he not do what is very small? Let him tell what I had in my mind and what I have done."
Nero said, "Between us, I do not know myself."
Shimon said,
"Let Kifah say what I am thinking of, or what I am doing."
Kifah said, "What Shimon has in his mind I will show that I know, by my doing what he is thinking about."
Shimon said,
"Oh, know this, O emperor, that no one knows the thoughts of men but the God alone. Is not therefore Kifah lying?"
Kifah said, "You then, who says you are the son of Elohim, tell what I have in my mind. Disclose, if you can, what I have just done in secret." For Kifah, having blessed the barley loaf that he had received, and having broken it with his right hand and his left, had heaped it up and hidden it in his sleeves. Then Shimon, enraged that he was not able to tell the secret of the Sholiach, cried out, saying,
Let the dogs come forth and eat him up before Kaiser.
And suddenly there appeared great dogs and rushed at Kifah. But Kifah, stretching forth his hands to pray, showed to the dogs the loaf that he had blessed, which loaf they could see, and the dogs vanished from sight.
Then Kephas said to Nero, "Look, I have shown you that I knew what Shimon was thinking of, not by words, but by deeds. For he, having promised that he would bring angels against me, has brought dogs, in order that he might show that he has no godlike angels, but dog-like angels."
And Nero said to Shimon, "What is it, Shimon?
I think we have got the worst of it."
Shimon said,
"This man, both in Yehuda and in all Palestine and Caesarea, has done the same to me, and from very often striving with me, he has learned how to escape from me. But the thoughts of men no one knows, but Elohim alone."
And Kephas said to Shimon, "Certainly you feign yourself to be a god. Why then do you not reveal the thoughts of everyone?" Then Nero, turning to Paulos, said,
"Why do you say nothing, Paulos?"
Paulos answered and said, "Know this, O emperor, that if you permit this magician to do such things, it will bring a plethora of the greatest mischief to your country, and will bring down your empire from its position."
Nero said to Shimon, "What do you say, Shimon?"
Shimon said,
"If I do not manifestly hold myself out to be a god, no one will bestow upon me due reverence."
Oh yes, my friends, at this juncture, I must announce that we are out of time, but we'll continue this search for the perfect answer when we come back in the next segment, probably tomorrow night. So stay tuned. Appreciate you being on board. I love to be with you these nights, especially because I just don't have any friends. Too busy editing audio all the time.